Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From MotoWeek.net, it's the MotoWeek Podcast with your host, Wilson. Why, hello and welcome to MotoWeek. My name is Wilson. Thank you so much for listening to the only MotoGP show on the internet that both wants to know what's going to happen this weekend and at the same time doesn't want to know. And I get that sounds odd, although the things I say at the beginning of the show often are very odd, but there's a reasoning behind it, all right? There are only two races left this season, and we've got a championship battle that could very easily go down not just to the final race, but maybe even the final few laps of the year. And I absolutely want to see how that's going to play out. But knowing now that things were going to be so close at the end of the year, I don't want the season to end. I want the excitement and the championship intrigue to be around for a lot longer. Because let's face it, during the Marquez era and the Lorenzo and Rossi era before that, more often than not, the championship was not decided at Valencia. And so this is a really cool opportunity to be able to see it go down that far if it does get to that point. And so you want to know beforehand, you want to know like 6 months ago that this is going to be a championship that goes all the way down to the wire because it makes things more exciting every single weekend. But we do still have two more races left in this championship. And Sunday at Sepang marks the first opportunity all year long for a rider to actually clinch the MotoGP championship. And it's not necessarily the rider we thought would be in that position a couple of months back in, like, say, April or so. So on the show today, we will talk about the title race and the championship contenders and the clinch scenarios. And then I'll tell you what I think will really happen and whether this title is going to go all the way down to the final race of the year. And we'll do that in the course of our full preview of round 19 of the 2022 MotoGP World Championship, the Malaysian GP at Sepang International Circuit. On top of that, there are actually a couple of interesting MotoGP news stories that I want to discuss as well. And of course, as always, on a race weekend, I'll wrap up the show by making some picks. And I will warn you going in that these are kind of picks by committee that I'm making this week. I'm taking how the rider is doing recently. I'm combining it with the possibility of weather this weekend and then throwing that all in together and letting that average out into my picks as opposed to, you know, one rider who I think is going to dominate the day. So I don't know if that approach is going to go very well, but I am going to give it a try. So we got a lot of ground to cover. Let's get on with it. Before we start, though, I would like to take the opportunity, if you haven't done it yet, to invite you over to the website at MotoWeek.net. You can find all of the latest episodes there. You can also follow on Twitter at MotoWeek and on Instagram at MotoWeekUSA. And most importantly, let me know what you think. Let me know what you want me to talk about on the show. Leave your comments. You can do that on Facebook at facebook.com/MotoWeek or over on the Reddit sub at r/MotoWeek. And do me a favor, subscribe when you get to the Reddit sub too. You won't regret it. And then you can also support the show if you want to, and only if you want to, on Patreon at patreon.com/MotoWeek. All right, so here we go. Next up is the rundown. This is the list of just about everything we're going to talk about on this episode of the show, which is mostly dedicated to the Malaysian GP, but we have some MotoGP news stories we're going to start with, including the idea of using red flag buttons on bikes. We'll talk about what they are and whether I think they're a good idea or not. And then Darren Binder, one of the few MotoGP riders that didn't have anything set for next year. He now officially has plans. We'll tell you where he's going to be racing. Then we'll move on to Sepang and our full preview of round 19 of the 2022 MotoGP Championship and the first opportunity for somebody to actually clinch the title. We'll start by talking about the track and whether Sepang really is stop and go, like its reputation suggests.
And I'll tell you why maybe I think that's not the most accurate description. Then we'll move on to the riders, starting with the favorites, the guys I think have the best shot at the podium and maybe even a win this weekend. After that, I'll give you my watch list riders who might surprise on Sunday. Then after all of that, like I said, I'm going to do picks by committee this week, is what I'm calling it. Basically, I'm going to combine how they've done here in the past, how they've been running recently, and then factor in the possibility for weather, which is a real possibility, and use that to try to come up with the most likely top five riders in the race. So definitely stick around for that. All right, so let's start by talking a little bit of MotoGP news, because there was an interesting comment made over Phillip Island weekend by Luca Marini that a lot of news outlets picked up on, including MotoGP.com. And it was the idea or a brief discussion about red flag buttons being put on the bikes in the paddock. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. But he made that comment in conjunction with the windy conditions in Friday practice in Australia, along with the rain back in Burraram that ultimately caused the Moto2 race to be cut short. Now, in that particular race, there was a moment where the leader of the race put his arm up, which is typically how you signal to the stewards and the race direction that there are dangerous conditions on the track. And at first, that didn't do anything until some other riders also raised their arm, and then that convinced race direction to throw the red flag. And what Luca Marini was saying is, hey, there needs to be a more definitive way to get feedback from the riders when making a determination whether or not the conditions merit a red flag and a session or a race should be stopped. And what Marini suggested is that the technology is there, and of course it is, to give riders some sort of button, which everybody's calling now a red flag button. And it would be a button on the handlebars of the bike that a rider can press if they think conditions are too dangerous. And that would send a signal straight to race direction, with the idea being, and this is kind of what Lucas said, I'm paraphrasing here, that if enough riders press the button, and he suggested a number of maybe 80%, that then a red flag would automatically come out, even if race direction hadn't made a definitive determination yet. And generally, I really like this idea, because currently, like I mentioned earlier, the only way a rider can signal unsafe conditions is by sitting up on the bike and raising their hand. And that creates a bit of a tricky situation for multiple reasons, not the least of which is for that rider that sits up and raises his hand. At that point, they have to kind of hope that race direction or other riders agree and put up their hands, then the red flag comes out. If race direction doesn't agree, well, now they've lost all of their drive and their momentum in the race because they sat up on the bike and they took one of their hands off the handlebars. That could cost someone a spot. It could cost somebody an entire race. And remember, at the same time, they're probably rolling off the throttle at that point too. And so for riders behind them, if they're not paying attention, that could create a potentially unsafe situation for a rider or riders that are slowing down in the bad conditions while the people coming behind them don't really know what's happening, especially in a rain condition like we had at Burraram, where there was a lot of spray and it might have been difficult to see. So a button makes sense. The rider can keep riding as best they can given the conditions, and at the same time, signal their concern and do so without altering the way that they're currently riding and without committing to rolling off the throttle necessarily and creating a situation that could be dangerous on track. I think it's a simple and easy enough option in terms of collecting rider input. Now, what race direction does with that input? Well, I don't know if an 80% rule is correct, if that's too much, if that's too little, but one way or the other, they would at least have the information because, like Luca Marini was saying in reference to Phillip Island, out where they were on the track, they knew that the wind was dangerous, but the people back in pit road or in the box where race direction is, they obviously don't know exactly what's happening at a particular part of the track because, well, they're not there. And so it would allow riders more flexibility in notifying race direction of potentially unsafe conditions. And we've seen in the past with raising the hand that it doesn't really get out of control. Now, maybe the buttons would change something, I don't know. But the riders, especially at the MotoGP level and really in Moto3 and Moto2 as well, seem very reluctant to want to end a race unless there really is something dangerous out there. And so just like the raising of the hand isn't something that's overused by riders, I don't think the press of a button would be overused by riders. I think they would use it very seriously and only in the worst possible cases. And that also could allow, having a button, it could allow riders further back in the field to signal their concern. Because the guy who was running in 12th place at the time could probably sit up and raise his hand, and it's more likely that the stewards think that he's just having some sort of mechanical issue as opposed to he's signaling that conditions are very dangerous. Usually that's reserved for the riders at the front, which are heading into those dangerous conditions first. And of course, those riders may or may not have a vested interest in the race ending or continuing at a particular point in time. And so it allows those riders back in the field to voice their opinion on the conditions of the track too. So I don't really have a problem with it. And, you know, if they implement something like that, I don't think it would be a big cost for teams. It may or may not help in the end, but I can't really see how it would hurt having that possibility. Because ultimately, race direction is going to make that call whether the red flag comes out or not. They would just have a lot more information and quality information at their disposal if it does. So that's something I really hope that they institute very quickly over the offseason, and they can maybe test it in preseason testing and then roll it out for the year. The second story I wanted to talk about, Darren Binder, one of the few MotoGP riders who hadn't announced any plans for 2023. Now he's confirmed what we all pretty much thought was going to happen, that he'll be heading for the first time ever, by the way, to the Moto2 paddock, hooking up with the Liquamali Intact team for next season. And this is big news for two reasons. Number one, because it means Little Binder isn't totally out of luck after being one of the odd men out with the Suzuki Forest grid contraction for next season. And number two, because in conjunction with the Darren Binder announcement, this also marks the arrival of Husqvarna as a manufacturer in the middleweight class. That KTM imprint is branching out from their successful Moto3 affiliation to make the jump to a second series. I don't know if that's a precursor to MotoGP or not, but remember, we do have two grid slots hanging out there from Suzuki's departure. I think right now KTM has expanded enough by making the Tech 3 team technically a gas-gas factory team. At this point now, they need to get their bikes better and they need to get them more competitive. But who knows, if they can do that between now and next year, and those grid slots are still available, maybe this is a stepping stone to Husqvarna eventually being in the premier class as well. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised by that, because KTM seems to have the secret plan right now anyway to take over literally every single team in the paddock, just naming them different manufacturers. But I think this is a really good move all the way around. That Intact team had a brief bit of success recently with Tom Luthia that was a couple of years back, but they've really been looking for a rider with more upward potential, which I do think Binder definitely provides. And then on the rider side of that equation, let's be honest, Darren Binder really should have been headed to Moto2 in the first place instead of being forced to leap all the way to the premier class. It was just a matter of circumstance that that happened. But I will say that that experience that he did and is getting this year, that could prove incredibly valuable as he makes the step backwards. And I think it gives him a great shot to be a podium contender right out of the box. So he will get benefit from having that full year in MotoGP. Now, Little Binder is going to team up with a German rider, Lukas Tulevich, who's making his return to the Moto2 grid. He had a very lackluster season aboard a KTM in 2019. He switched to Moto E after that, where he won a race last season it was. And a week and a half ago, he also won the European Moto2 Championship in Aragon. So a much improved rider coming back to the grid. And I think a lot of potential for that Intact team. It'll be very interesting to see how they can capitalize on it next year and improve their results over this season, even though they have a whole new rider lineup. All right, but that's Moto2. And what we're here to really talk about is MotoGP. Most notably, this weekend's race at Sepang. And it is very difficult to imagine but we have already reached the penultimate round of the 2022 MotoGP season and the conclusion of a very, very interesting title race. I sounded very dramatic when I said that. I apologize. But we do have a championship battle on our hands, is what I'm trying to say. And we have two races left. And in my opinion, one that favors each of the main contenders. Now, this weekend, it's Pecco Bagnaia. He'll be looking to extend his newfound point advantage as we head to the very high-speed Sepang International Circuit. But can he step up? Or will Fabio Quartararo mount a huge comeback performance to steal the show, get some valuable points along with it, and make his play to get back in the title lead? We will talk about the contenders on the show today and how I think each one will run Sunday. I will do that in a couple of moments. We'll talk about the other favorites for this weekend, along with my watch list riders of potential surprises. But first, before we get to who's in this race, let's discuss where they're racing and what makes Sepang International Circuit so interesting. And the 3.5 mile, which works out to what? Let me do the math here. 500 kilometers? No, I don't think it's quite that long. But the 3.5 mile circuit is really about as opposite as you can get from last weekend's race at Phillip Island. That track was all about big corners, smooth transitions, and momentum, where the Malaysian GP is about straight line speed, hard braking, hard acceleration, hot temperatures, and a couple of twists thrown in. And this weekend, of course, also the ever-present threat of rain. And make no mistake, the weather this weekend could be pivotal, not just in the race, but in the championship as well. I mean, we got that surprise weather in Australia. There will be no surprises if the rain falls this weekend. Everyone will be expecting the possibility that it could happen and that it could have a major impact on how the riders line up in this race and how they run the race. Now, the flyaway races have kind of swapped positions a couple of times in years past in the order that they're run. And I'm really glad that even though they aren't all in a row this year like they were last year, that these races are in the same general order on the schedule. We had Japan first, then Australia, then Sepang, with, of course, this time around Thailand tossed in after Motegi. And the reason I like that order is because even though Sepang has that reputation for being a stop-and-go track, it really isn't. Not nearly as much as a place like Motegi is. Motegi is almost the definition, or the definition, really, of a stop-and-go track. Thailand, not that far behind, really. Then the series shifts gears and heads to Phillip Island, which is a circuit that goes in a completely different direction than those other two. Then you get to Malaysia, and that really kind of brings those ideas all together because it really, in my opinion at least, lies somewhere between those two extremes of a place like Motegi and a place like Phillip Island. Yes, the hard acceleration and braking zones are the dominant feature, especially the way that they're built around that excellent grandstand, but there are also quite a few mid-speed corners, a pair of double apex turns, and those things kind of balance the track back again, at least a bit, to corner speed and momentum. And that's why, up until recently, this track has really been a perpetual battle between Honda and Yamaha. It really was only once Ducati started to get their chassis figured out that it allowed them to take full advantage of all of that big horsepower on the straights and then not lose it all in the middle sections of the track, and that's balanced things out. In fact, it's really leaned things slightly in the direction of Ducati here because of those big straights. And they are the dominant features here. That big final backstretch, which goes around a 180-degree corner and on to the front stretch. And they are really fast, 185-ish, 90 or so on the backstretch, and then over 200 on the front stretch. And of course, you've got that 45 or 50 mile per hour hairpin connecting them. And that's just one of really four hard braking zones at this track. You throw in that many, that means you have a lot of places to slipstream on the straights and then to beat somebody on the brakes and make a daring pass. And plenty of places also to wait too long trying to make one of those moves and blowing it into a corner. And turn one is a prime example of an opportunity or a mistake waiting to happen, because it comes at the end of that front stretch, and it's a very, very tight turn. In addition to that, you've got turn four. That's deceptively hard because it's coming at the end of a straight that curves at the beginning, so it's easy to not really realize how fast you're going and wait too long to brake. But the more technical parts of the track, really the twistier parts of the track, don't get a lot of credit, but they're very interesting, and they draw from different places. At least it seems like they're drawing from different places. A perfect example, turns one and two, the chicane at Pencor Lot, really is reminiscent of sector one at Assen. Not quite as extensive as that, but it has that kind of feel, very tight turns back to back. You've got the double apex combo at 7-8, and then again it turns 10 and 11 with that gentle bend that closes in on you. Then 13 and 14, the same idea as turns 10 and 11, but more extreme. And a critical corner, because it's not only tough, but that then leads on to the back straight. So you can't blow that corner, and you've got to get good drive and get on the throttle early, get the bike stood up, coming out of it to try to get the highest speed at the end of the straight before you get to that final corner. And like I mentioned a moment ago, that final corner is so much fun because, A, there is a lot of action that happens there because you have such hard braking, and there is such a big speed differential, and that leads to opportunities to pass. But on top of that, you can take several different lines through that final corner and make it work. And so that means if you're close to the guy in front of you or the guy who's in first, there is always a chance to do something heroic on that last lap. Now, the big straights certainly lend themselves to the Ducatis for sure, but with all of those tricky technical bits in between, the scale does tip a little bit back toward the handling bikes. And so this track is an overall test. It's not just a stop-and-go track. Even though the straights and the speeds and the multiple opportunities for hard braking kind of make it feel that way on the surface and give it that reputation. Now, on top of all of those other challenges that I just outlined, the potential for weather definitely looms large, especially when it pertains to the title race. We've seen both Fabio and Pecco struggle in less than ideal conditions. But of course, Pecco turned that around in a big way a couple of rounds back at Thailand, getting on the podium in the wet, while Fabio Quartararo in that same race drifted all the way outside the points in really what was one of his worst, if not his worst, MotoGP race ever. And right now, looking at the forecast, it's going to be hot, that's guaranteed, all weekend long. Friday looks pretty good when it comes to chance of rain. Almost none in the middle of the day. Saturday, it's looking about 50-50 for qualifying, and so that could make a major impact on how the grid lines up. And then Sunday, it keeps going back and forth over the past couple of days. I'm still going to say about 50-50, although the middle of the afternoon has the highest chance right now, and it's well over 50% chance of rain. So there is a real opportunity that we could have a wet race. We could have a flag-to-flag race. I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping that maybe Mother Nature is nice and nothing materializes and we get a dry race, but that possibility has to be considered. And as we go through some of these riders, keep that in mind. So now let's start talking about some of the riders in this weekend's race. And we're going to start with the contenders, in my opinion, of course. The riders that I think have the best shot at finishing on the podium in Malaysia, and maybe even have a chance to win the race if things go their way. We're going to start with our new championship leader, Pecco Bagnaia, who, despite trailing in the championship by 91 points earlier in the season, somewhat unexpectedly now finds himself as the first rider of the year in a position to actually clinch the 2022 MotoGP World Championship. Now, we'll talk about some scenarios and the realistic possibilities of those scenarios playing out in a moment. But first, let's talk about Pecco's chances in this race. And, you know, we talked about those big straights and the hard braking zones at Sepang, and it does generally lend itself to the characteristics of the Ducati. But like we just talked about, there are a lot of other parts to this circuit as well. And because of that, despite the rise of the Desmo here starting in 2016, they haven't really been dominant. They've scored 2 wins and 5 podiums in 4 races. Still, that's pretty good. I mean, that means that right off the bat, if all things were equal from 2019 to now, the bike itself has a 50% chance to win and a 42% chance to be somewhere on the podium. Now, of course, those numbers aren't the most reliable, being 3 years old since the last race here. But at the same time, the Ducati is a better bike now, too. And Pecco is a really, really good rider right now. In Bagnaia's only MotoGP race in Malaysia, he was 12th. Now, that was his rookie season, and his rookie season was not very good. But Pecco was also 3rd in his final Moto2 race in Sepang, so there's at least some sort of familiarity and comfort level for him with this track. More importantly, though, Bagnaia's been on an epic run heading into this race, and he carries all of the championship momentum right now. I mean, he's racked up 4 wins and 7 podiums in the last 8 races, and his only mediocre run in that span happened in Motegi, where, of course, he wrecked with that desperation move trying to get by Fabio Quartararo. Now, the interesting part of that entire run is that the biggest stop-and-go track across those races, Motegi, offered up Pecco's worst result of those 7 races. The more handling-based tracks didn't seem to hurt him so much. So that makes me think that Pecco has the advantage coming into this one. Does he have enough of an advantage to clinch the title? Well, let's look at a couple of different scenarios, only a couple here. And I know that people have done this ad nauseum on the internet, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But if Pecco Bagnaia wins, then he will leave with the championship if Fabio Quartararo finishes 4th or lower. Now, based on the past couple of races, the Fabio fans are like, oh man, that is not good odds. We'll talk about Fabio in a minute. I just want to throw out the scenarios right now. A second place result by Pecco would require Fabio to do no better than 7th, so outside of the top 7. So if Pecco doesn't win, Fabio's got a pretty good chance of extending things here. And then if Bagnaia lands on the back of the podium in 3rd, well, that means Fabio could finish anywhere in the top 10 and still be able to mathematically take things to Valencia, where I really think he and Yamaha will have an advantage over the Ducatis. And so that makes it seem a heck of a lot more realistic. But before we speculate too far on those scenarios, let's discuss the guy on the other side of this coin, the only other real challenger in the championship right now, Fabio Quartararo, who certainly 100% has his work cut out heading into this one. And this was certainly a hole that he dug for himself. You know, losing a few points to Pecco in Australia, that would have been understandable. But he let a lot more points slip out of his hands than expected. And that has Fabio painted into a serious corner coming into this weekend, trying to overcome a 14-point deficit. There's only 2 points coming in to Phillip Island, right? You know, like Pecco, Fabio has only run 1 MotoGP race in Malaysia, but unlike Bagnaia, that race was quite a bit more promising for his chances here. Quartararo actually landed on the pole his rookie year at the Malaysian GP, although he was only able to manage a 7th place in the race. Now, if you remember back to the scenarios, if he finishes in the top 7, he really puts the pressure on Pecco to have to go out and win the race if Bagnaia wants to clinch a championship here. Looking a little bit further back when it comes to Fabio, the results were a bit more promising. He was 5th here in Moto2 and 4th in Moto3. So again, like Pecco, some familiarity, some comfort level at this track. Now, the problem, obviously, isn't Fabio's performance here in the past, although it's not the best. His problem is his performance of late, because it is thoroughly mediocre, and I'm probably being nice putting it that way. Fabio Quartararo has failed to score a podium in the last 5 consecutive races, and in that span, he scored a grand total in 5 races. He scored 20 points. That's an average of 4 points per race. And he's only scored a podium in 1 of the last 8 races. And that's not going to get it done. That's exactly why Pecco Bagnaia is in this championship race and has the lead now. And the shift in the results and in his confidence level is dramatic. It's massive. I mean, if you look at the entire season, Fabio Quartararo's average finish when he made it to the checkered flag in the first 10 rounds of the year, the first half of the year, was 3.7 with no DNFs. His average in the 8 races since has dropped to 8.0 with 3 DNFs. So not only is he scoring less points on average when he makes it to the checkered flag, he's throwing away opportunities, and Fabio Quartararo is a rider who typically makes so few mistakes that it really does stand out. It really is astonishing. Now, that, of course, is the difference in the championship, right? But it also brings into question Fabio's potential heading into this race, because based on how Pecco does, when we've talked about those scenarios, that is then going to dictate how well Fabio has to do. And that puts a lot more pressure on Quartararo than it does on Bagnaia. And how he steps up to that pressure is really going to determine whether this championship is decided Sunday or whether it goes to the final race of the year. And for the Fabio fans out there, I don't want it to sound like I'm preaching a bunch of doom and gloom, because in my opinion, Quartararo has a very good chance of continuing this championship. You know, we go back to those scenarios we were just talking about a few minutes ago. Unless Pecco wins, Quartararo only needs to finish 7th or maybe even just 10th to keep the championship going to Valencia. Now, of course, the closer he is to Pecco, or if he's ahead of Bagnaia, that increases the chances that he can then use his advantage in Valencia to go out and then put the pressure on Pecco by trying to win the race and maybe even the championship with it. And so that shifts things in his advantage if he can get through this race in pretty good shape. I mean, if Pecco leaves Sepang with a 19-point lead or a 20-point lead in the standings, then it's going to be close to over. I mean, basically, Pecco's just going to have to cruise around at Valencia and not make any major mistakes. So the impetus really is on Fabio here, not just to run well, but to perform better than expected and either keep that gap as close as possible or even close that gap to make things really contentious going down to the wire in Valencia. And given Yamaha's history here and Quartararo's overall potential, that could happen. And in fact, I do see Fabio stepping up to easily, he could easily have a good enough day to propel this championship into the final race of the season and do so in a manner where he has a realistic shot. Now, the weather is really the wild card for him. I really think that Fabio needs a dry race here. I think if it rains, that it's going to hurt his confidence more than anything, and he needs every ounce of confidence he can muster up. But if it's dry, I mean, this is a guy, he's a champion, right? And he went through something similar to what he's going through right now in 2020. That prepared him to be much tougher in 2021. So it's in there. He can do it. He's just got to draw on that same feeling from last year to be able to step up and make something happen. So those are our two top riders in the championship. And of course, our two major contenders and the storyline coming into this race. But they're not my only favorites for this one. Let's move on to talk about Jack Miller next, because Jack has two big things going for him heading into this one. And neither of those really relate to his past success here. Not that he's terrible, he just hasn't been a podium contender. He's just kind of been there. Believe it or not, Jack Miller has finished exactly 8th in the last 4 MotoGP races he's run in Malaysia. 4 in a row with an 8th place finish. More importantly than that, though, is how Jack is running right now coming into this race. You know, we've talked about it for the last month or so, but ever since that KTM announcement, Miller has looked fantastic. The wreck at his home track disappointingly derailed that a little bit, but Jack still has scored 5 podiums in the last 9 rounds, and his average finish during that 9-round span is 5.1. And actually, that number is a little bit misleading because it includes the mistake he made in San Marino where he finished outside the points. Otherwise, his real average is a little bit lower than that even, than 5.1. But he comes into this race, of course, off of that disappointment in Australia, where he had the incident and the DNF in front of his hometown fans. He will be looking to make up for that and to reestablish the momentum that he had built up over those last few rounds. And just as importantly, he's typically great in the rain. We all know that. So whether or not I see Jack with an excellent opportunity here to help his factory Ducati teammate and steal some big points in Malaysia. He may or may not finish ahead of Pecco. I don't think there's going to be team orders here because, well, A, Pecco's ahead by 14 points. And B, if Jack Miller goes out and wins the race, that means Fabio Quartararo is not winning the race. And I think that's just as important to Ducati right now as how the actual points sort out between Miller and Bagnaia. Next rider I want to talk about on the favorites list for this weekend, Marc Marquez. And last week, I said big things for Marc. And a few people probably thought I was crazy, but I don't look too crazy right now, do I? Okay, don't answer that. But because of his performance last weekend, there is no question in my mind that Marc should be on the favorites list once again. And, you know, just like last week, we've talked about the majority of the riders in this favorites category already. We're getting to our fourth rider before we reach the first one of the group that actually has scored a podium at this track. And of course, very unsurprisingly, Marc is the most successful premier class rider on a MotoGP bike here, having scored two wins, four podiums, and a fourth place result, along with, of course, the debacle that was 2015. And if you're not familiar with that, and you're lucky enough to have Video Pass, just go watch it. I'm not going to start talking about it here. I'm not going to open that Pandora's box again. You make your own decision on the incident and eventually the ruling by race direction. That's all I'm going to say about that. But Marc has definitely been able to do the business here, and he enters this race really on an impressive run since returning to the Premier Class. Fourth and fifth place finishes in his first two full races after the fourth surgery on his broken arm. And that was all capped by an incredibly impressive 100th Premier Class podium last weekend in Australia. Sepang offers up a slightly bigger physical challenge than Phillip Island did, especially without an off week coming in between these rounds. But Marc is still very likely in a good place physically, and there is no question that he has a ton of momentum coming out of his first podium of 2022 and really being a top five rider with the exception of that first race back where he had the DNF. So given his past success here, I have a hard time thinking that he's going to come into this one without a ton of momentum. And rain or not really makes no difference to him. Marc has the ability to shine this weekend. So he's no longer a big surprise being on the favorites list, but I will toss in a little bit of a curveball here at the end. The last rider I want to talk about as a favorite this weekend probably will feel like a bit of a stretch to a lot of you. That rider, Alex Rins. And I know what you're saying, dude, you're just putting him here because he won last weekend. Well, yes, last weekend's victory certainly gives him a huge boost of confidence, and not just Rins, but Suzuki as a whole, well, the team, not the manufacturer, as they desperately try to finish off their time in MotoGP with some sort of success. So he's definitely going to be showing up thinking he can make a difference. And believe it or not, this is a track where Alex Rins has been pretty excellent in the past. He's run three MotoGP races here. The first one didn't go so well. He was disqualified in the end after taking a shortcut to get to pit lane after he crashed, so he wasn't going to finish well there anyway. But that was his rookie season. And after that, he was excellent in his last two races here, finishing second to Marc Marquez in 2018 and then landing fifth in the last race run here in 2019. And I'll be honest, I am not huge on the idea that last week's victory is some sort of measuring stick on how he'll do in this one or in Valencia. But I will freely admit that his Phillip Island win is a sign of some newfound confidence on Rins' part. And that's separate from the situation at Suzuki. And, you know, given some promising results in the past, maybe we could see something here. I could imagine him turning that momentum into another good finish before the year is out. And, you know, maybe that's at Valencia because he's back on home soil. But maybe that's here, and it's not another win necessarily, but hopefully a fitting parting result as the Suzuki effort dwindles down and comes to an end. So those are my favorites this weekend. The riders, I think, have the best shot to compete for a podium. Now let's move on to my watch list. And this is a group of riders who you may or may not thought of coming into the weekend, but they're running really well right now, or maybe they've run well in the past at this track. But for one reason or another, I think they have the opportunity and they have the ability to step up and turn a few heads and maybe surprise us. And we're going to start that watch list for this weekend with Aleix Espargaró. And it is a bit of a disappointment to see a rider that's been in the championship mix so long fall off the favorites list and onto the watch list in such a critical race when everything is seemingly on the line. But it's also just as much of a disappointment that his only real chance for the title at this point is for the two best riders in the sport to both make a big mistake Sunday at Sepang. But unfortunately for all of us, that's essentially the case. I mean, his hopes are looking pretty distant right now, and that's hard to believe given the year he's had. But with a really good run, Aleix can at least extend things mathematically into the final race of the season. Can he do that here? Well, his best Sepang finish in the premier class was at 7th, which isn't bad. Not great, but not bad. But that came all the way back in 2015, and it was on a Suzuki. On the Aprilia in the Malaysian GP, he's posted results of 11th and 13th. Not exactly confidence-inspiring, especially coupled with the fact that his average finish over the last three rounds heading into this one has been 12.0. Yeah. In fact, it's interesting to look at his average finish, just like we did with Fabio's. The first 15 rounds of the year, first 15, Aleix Espargaró's average finish, 4.9. His average finish over the last three, 12.0. Yeesh. I mean, that is his entire season right there. It all boiled down to the last three races. But, you know, while most hope is gone right now, all hope isn't, and the RSGP is way better this season than it was in 2019. And Aleix is a much better and much more experienced rider than he was even in 2019. So I really hope, I've got my fingers crossed, I'm pulling for Aleix and Aprilia. I hope that they can come up with a good race and a solid rebound performance to at least try to mathematically make him still a possibility when things get to Valencia a few weeks down the road. Next up on my watch list is Annea Bastianini. And he's in a really good spot right now. He's got the factory contract in his back pocket. Didn't have to prove anything to anybody. And that has already spurred him on to some much more consistent results than we saw out of him earlier in the year. In the last five rounds or so, since Ducati made their decision, Annea's confidence has really shown through and the results have followed. He scored one win and two podiums in the last five rounds, but his average finish during that span, 4.6. And this is from the same rider who in the first 13 races of the season, despite the wins, had four DNFs and four more results that were 10th or worse in the first 13 races. That's a pretty sizable swing. And it means that he's finding more comfort and more consistency in the wake of a massively up and down start to his sophomore season. Considering that he's coming into this race off of 6th and 5th place results in the last two rounds, and at two tracks that really had massively different characteristics, it's going to be interesting to see if he can translate that into more positive results in Malaysia by blending what he was able to do at Phillip Island with what he was able to do in Thailand at a track that's a little bit of a combination of the two in several ways. Now, the next rider I'm keeping my eye on going into this weekend is Johann Zarco. And last weekend, the Johann continued his trend of struggling to reach the podium in the second half of a MotoGP season, turning in a decent but not great 8th place result after starting on the front two rows. But if there is a track that can break that second half trend, Sepang is probably it. Now, Zarco has run three races, three premier class races in Malaysia. But he made the podium in two of them. Now, there is a bit of a caveat there, and that caveat does work in Zarco's favor. His two podiums were in 2017 and 18. They were both third place results. He did run the race in 2019, but that was the KTM season. And he had just got done sitting out three rounds. Then he picked up with Honda. That was his second race in with Honda. He DNF'd. I don't really even consider that to be part of his record. I look at those two third place results as much more representative of his performance potential at this track. But it's not the only reason to think that Zarco could be a factor, because before he got to MotoGP, Johan scored back-to-back victories in Moto2, one in each of his championship-winning seasons. Now, I'm not sure that that translates directly to, you know, a podium in this one, the Moto2 races, and that's why he doesn't make my list of favorites. But if there is a track where Zarco is capable of exceeding expectations and getting on the podium in the second half of the season, this is it. So he makes, for me, a pretty good sleeper pick in this race. A couple of other riders that I'm going to be watching out for as the weekend starts to progress. This one is an iffy one for me, but stick with me for my reasoning here. Maverick Viñales. And it seems like a really long time ago now, but Maverick was actually the last MotoGP rider to win a race in Malaysia. In fact, he beat Marc Marquez by 3 seconds in that race. And you typically don't associate Maverick Viñales and Sepang, but he's always been reasonably fast here. Outside of the 2019 win, he finished fourth in 2018, and he's never finished lower than ninth here in the Premier class, even back on a Suzuki, even in his rookie season. And normally that might be enough to merit some consideration, at least a little bit, for the favorites list. And he would have been on my favorites list for this one had this round happened, say, right after San Marino. But since that particular confidence-inspiring third podium of the year, Mav has been decidedly average. And Phillip Island kind of put an exclamation point on that. He struggled so much with tires that he drifted all the way outside of the points by the end of the day. So he needs to get things back on track. He does have the opportunity here to do it, given his history, but the key is really going to be Maverick's ability to refocus and recover from the fact that things around him may not be perfect right now and haven't really been perfect for the last four races. So the battle is in his head, again, as much as it is between him and the track, and asking him to just ignore what's happened the past few rounds, especially the last round, that might be a pretty big ask when it comes to Mav. But I am intrigued by his potential here, and that's why I definitely want to keep an eye on him. And then the final rider on my watch list, and I know some people are going to roll their eyes here, Miguel Oliveira. And I will be perfectly honest, it's his record this year in the rain, and especially that victory at Thailand, that's what puts him here. Because there is a real chance for some bad weather for the majority of the weekend, both Saturday and Sunday. The odds, like I mentioned earlier, at this point in time when I'm recording the show, about 50-50 for qualifying and a little over 50% for the middle of the day on Sunday, but generally 50% the entire day. And I'm pretty certain that I know which 50% Miguel is going to be hoping for on Saturday and Sunday. Although I will say, he's not really that bad here under normal conditions. I mean, he hasn't run a MotoGP race yet. He sat out 2019 with an injury at the end of his rookie season. But before that, he racked up 2 wins and 3 podiums in his previous 4 races across Moto2 and Moto3. So there is a base for him to build off of here. And if the rain shows up, that's just going to increase his level of confidence at this track. So like I said, I know that people are rolling their eyes, a couple of people are, but he seriously should be considered coming into this weekend and not just because of the potential for weather. And on top of that, he's on the way out of KTM in a few weeks, so he's got nothing to race for but himself, which often is a good place to draw from. Although in the end, I really think that the rain is his best bet right now with this particular bike and how he's been riding. All right, so that finishes up my watch list, which means we have one more thing to discuss here. My picks for this weekend's race. And like I said at the beginning of the show, this was kind of a picks by committee thing. And what I mean by that is I took all of the factors into consideration. How guys have been running recently, where they are in the championship right now, what they need to do. Roll the rain into that, the possibility for some weather. Spit it all out, and that's where I came up with these five riders finishing in this order for this particular race. So here are my picks for the top five finishers in Sunday's Malaysian GP. In fifth, I'm going Johann Zarco. Now, a couple of my picks here are a bit of a hedge on the weather, and this kind of is one of them. I mean, there are lots of riders capable of a top five here, but we talked about Zarco. He brings a great combination of speed, past results here, and experience in all types of conditions to the table. So that gives him a great, great chance to finish in the top five. Fourth in this one, I'm going to say Fabio Quartararo, but I really don't know. I mean, Fabio has been so off his game recently that I might be a bit optimistic here, and the chances of weather definitely do not help him. But I refuse to believe that he won't put up a genuine fight with the title on the line. So he'll at least try to get himself a podium finish. And he genuinely does have the ability, just being a little bit conservative, because I don't know what Fabio Quartararo is going to show up. The one from the first half of the season or the one we've seen in the second half of the year. So that brings me to my podium finishers in this one. In third, I'm going to go with Pecco Bagnaia. And he is really in a fantastic spot right now at this particular track with this particular point lead. And that gives him a measure of flexibility. If the weather shows up, he'll be cautious. If it doesn't, he'll be aggressive, but not overly aggressive, because he doesn't have to go out here and win this race to set himself up for a championship in Valencia. But he does have to make it to the end of the race. That potential for caution knocks him down a few spots for me, despite the fact that I think he'll have speed. So I'm putting him in third. Second for me, Sunday in Sepang, a guy who has none of the worries of Fabio and Pecco heading into this one, Marc Marquez. He's got so little to lose. He's got a lot of momentum from last week, and he's at a track where he's had solid success in the past. I don't see why he doesn't remain aggressive, even if that makes people like Jorge Martin a little bit mad. And I don't see why he doesn't continue to push to get back on the top step of a podium heading into the offseason. I think a win would be very important for him and that 93 team. Maybe not quite at this track. Maybe Valencia is the place. I don't know. But I'm going to pick Mark to finish second in this one. And your winner, Sunday in Malaysia, Jack Miller. Like Mark, he's racing for himself right now. He's got very little, if anything, to lose. But he's also racing to make up for Australia. So he can be aggressive. The weather won't be a problem for him if there is any. He's got a lot going his way right now with a bike that will be fast at this track. This could, very well, far more than Valencia, this could be Jack Miller's farewell victory to the Desmo. So those are my top five picks for this weekend's Malaysian GP. Johann Zarco in fifth, Fabio Quartararo in fourth, and on the podium, Pecco Bagnaia, Marc Marquez, and your winner Sunday, Jack Miller. And if things do go that way, then that means the championship will continue to Valencia, the final race of the year. Do you think I'm right? Do you think I'm wrong? You know what to do. Let me know on Facebook or Reddit. Tell me why my picks are complete and utter rubbish and why yours are way, way better as you tell me who you think is going to win the race. And then, of course, since we are going racing this weekend, that means we will have a post-race show. So check back at the end of the day Sunday, where I'll discuss all of the action from Malaysia in Moto 3, Moto 2, and MotoGP, discuss the impact on the MotoGP championship, and remember Moto2 as well, because that one's really, really close right now. And I'll give you my take on Sepang, then it'll be your turn. Leave your Malaysian GP comments on Facebook and Reddit, and we will talk about them on next week's show, along with the latest MotoGP news and a whole lot more as we get closer and closer to the season finale. So what do you think? We going to have a new champion in MotoGP on Sunday? or is it going to go to Valencia? I already told you what I think. I think it's going to make it to the end of the year. We're all going to find out together, and this is going to be a wild weekend, especially if the rain shows up. But one way or the other, it will be full of drama and definitely a lot of fun. And I can't wait to talk to you about it at the end of the weekend. So until we chat again just a couple of days from now, I want to thank you so much for listening. Ride safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.